My first question is, as you've been a delegate for the Y7 summit previously, what would you think is the main topic that should be discussed at this year's Y7?
Interesting. So I suppose the first thing to say is I'm not a delegate this year. So my views won't necessarily represent this year's Y7. But I think kind of the biggest thing for me and the biggest thing for me when I was a delegate in 2019 was definitely about the inclusion of young people's voices. I think for far too long, kind of young people have felt excluded from political debate, but also lots of other circles, so economic circles in particular. And I think that's something that has really worsened through coronavirus, which I think has hit young people the hardest in many respects. So I'm sure, I mean, you guys probably suffered this where you weren't going to school for a period of time and you're online learning, and it just does really, really push you back. And kind of we were coming from quite a difficult place to begin with already, and now I think it's even harder. So I think it's really important that young people are included, not just in kind of democratic circles like the Y7, which I think is vital, but also ensuring that they're actually in the labour markets and that they're listened to in all aspects of their life.
Thank you. For our second question today is, can you give us 3 examples of how you have empowered voices of our generation?
Oh, 3. That's a lot, isn't it? I'll try. So I think one is probably being the co-chair of the Y7 task force this year, which it has kind of, as I covered with you a little bit before, but it has been about actually organizing the Y7. And when I hear the words organizing, I think, snore, that sounds really boring. It's just kind of doing loads of paperwork and writing lots of lists. But I think actually for me, this is felt anyway like I am really empowering young people, because in organizing the Y7 summit, we've really put inclusion at the forefront of what we've tried to do, and we've really seen the Y7 as a vehicle for showing young people that their voices can be heard and should be listened to. So for instance, when we organised the virtual Y7 summit, we really pushed all of the way to ensure that we could live stream it so that young people all over the world could see kind of the impact that young people's voices can have. And by doing things like the mock G7 programme, which is encouraging kind of school children all over the country to get involved in the Y7 and start articulating their ideas and passions, I think, yeah, I guess being part of the organising of the Y7 has been a huge thing for me. And then the second one is maybe a sillier one, but I've always been interested in youth voice and empowering young people right from when I was also a super young person. So when I was 11, I led the charge against corrugated carrots in my junior school, because I hated the school dinners that we were having. And I was like, this isn't fair. Although we're young people, we should be able to eat healthy and good food too. So I started a petition and shared it with all of my classmates in the playground on like A4 written bits of paper, and people were writing their signatures in pencil and stuff. And we managed to actually change the school catering company as a result.
So, wow.
Yeah, I know. I think one of my biggest achievements to date. But yeah, I think that was definitely what kind of gave me the bug for empowering young people.
Yeah.
And then the third one, probably just generally, I've always been on quite a lot of like youth boards, or like tried to be a youth representative on a board that largely adults were on, just to try and show people that young people do have a view on things and actually are a really vital part of society. So just doing various pieces of work like that, like Portsmouth Youth Parliament. I grew up in Portsmouth and sat on Youth Parliament, and being like children's trustee boards, stuff like that as I grew up.
Wow. To someone who has an interest in the health and well-being of our planet, what impact does the Y7 have on the G7?
Mm. So this is a difficult one, I think, because I think for a long time the answer has probably been not as much impact as we would have liked, which is a bit tricky to say, because I guess for all the reasons I've spoken about before, is that young people's voices actually aren't listened to that often, and that's something that we have been really trying to change, particularly in the last couple of years, is strengthening the Y7 as a body and actually really kind of anchoring ourselves to the institutions that run the G7 and building relationships with, for instance, the G7 Sherpas, who are the personal representatives of like the world's leaders that discuss the G7. And now I think that we are building those relationships and getting our names heard and our voices in the room and getting a bit of a reputation. We're starting to make a bit more of a difference, I think. So keep an eye out for the G7's recommendations, and we can see if the Y7 has made a difference this year, and fingers crossed, there will be a clear kind of link between the two communiques, which is exciting, and we will see.
Yes. So this sort of questions are like links of the other one. It's like, with more of our generation in protests about climate change, do you think that more people should listen to our voices?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think climate change is a really good example of ways that young people have made a real hullabaloo and have made a change. Like, everybody knows who Greta Thunberg is. She's become an absolute icon. And I do think has really brought the issue to the forefront of people's minds. I think there's probably two things to say on this one, which I'd like to change a bit. It's probably, I think climate change is vital and needs and should be at the forefront of everybody's minds. But I do think that young people actually also have a view on lots of other things and should do, because we inherit the outcomes of the decisions that are made today, tomorrow. And I think actually kind of we get left out of other debates, and the focus can sometimes be a bit too strongly on climate change, I think, and actually there's so many links between so many different policy issues that aren't explored, and that's why the Y7 really likes the idea of futures thinking, which is about seeing the connections between lots of different issues and taking a more holistic view on things. So I would say that I would like us to, as a kind of a youth movement, to move more into that space. And then the other thing is around protesting. I think protesting gets a really bad name, and I don't think it should. I think it's, in the past, it has been why so many really positive things have happened. And protesting is kind of the, what is it? I can't remember the quote, but there's a quote around it being like the voice of the silenced or something along those lines. I don't know whether anybody knows what it is. But I also think that young people, if they were allowed into more circles, so if there was like a youth advisory board, for instance, so for instance the Y7 this year wants there to be a youth advisory board on artificial intelligence, and if more kind of bodies and organizations like that existed, we would have more methods to kind of create change, and we wouldn't just be limited to one.
How have you sort of created change, especially in your environment, to that fit the morals of the G7's aims?
So I suppose if you think about what the G7 was set out to do, the ethos of the G7 is it's the most advanced economies in the world, which is now potentially debatable whether or not that is still the case, but one of the core things that the G7 countries have in common is supposedly democratic values, and I think that's something that the Y7 and my work with the Y7 definitely tries to kind of work with and ensure that young people feel that democracy is something worth engaging in and that they feel included in decision-making processes. So I suppose that that is a way that we're aligned with the G7's morals. And there's going to be a really interesting report that the Y7 carried out, which was on how persuaded young people are by democracy. And I've got one of the facts here, which is quite striking actually. So 71% of young people were satisfied with the functioning of democracy in 2007, and that is now 56% of young people in 2020. So it's a really stark difference of how listened to people now feel, and that is something that we are trying to change.
Yes. In your opinion, what would you say is your biggest achievement in relation to the goals of the G7 summit?
I think, so I suppose the goals of the G7 summit maybe change slightly each year in terms of the specific policies that they're going for. I would say we're probably quite, the Y7 is probably quite aligned on a lot of those policies, but is potentially more ambitious in some of them. And I know kind of climate change, for instance, is very high on people's agendas, and that's something that the Y7 is definitely pushing for. But I'm not a Y7 delegate personally, so they aren't my policies. So I guess the democracy thing is probably the big thing for me.
So I also have a particular interest in starting a career in the same field as yourself. So what piece of advice would you give to someone like me in the younger generation?
Yeah. So what kind of field would you say that is?
Like world leaders and that, like mm-hmm. probably going like overseas and like helping like translate and that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So kind of international decision making kind of work. That's a good question. So I'm a civil servant and I work outside of this job, and I work mainly on kind of domestic policy, so that isn't really my day job. But in terms of the work that I do with the Y7 and connecting young leaders internationally, I'd say the biggest thing that I have learned that would help you in that career is probably finding people that you can speak to that have done similar, finding out about their backgrounds, and making them interested in you. And I think something that we found really helpful as the Y7 is getting people on board with what we're doing is having quite a clear mission and a clear purpose. So it's about trying to kind of find out what your values are and what it is that you really want to go out there and change. And I think as the Y7, we've kind of pinned that down as it being like youth voice, inclusion, democratic values. And because we're able to talk about that with people that we get in contact with, they're like, oh my gosh, that's really inspiring, that's great, yeah, come and meet this person, or why don't you help me with this project. And it's kind of building up that network and doing things in the background that I think works quite well. And it's quite hard to get into this kind of career as your day job, so trying to do things on the side, I guess, like what I'm doing with this is a good piece of advice, I think.
Thank you. The G7 and the Y7 focuses on sustainability and climate change, but can you give us some examples of how you are making your job as eco-friendly as you can be?
I can try. I think I should always be better at this than I am at the moment. I don't know if you guys feel the same. Yeah. But it always feels like there's more that I can do. I think in a way, actually, COVID has meant that we have been more sustainable than we would have been otherwise. So we did the whole summit completely virtually. Normally you'd have young leaders from all over the globe flying in to one location and talking about things in a room. And actually we found that we didn't need to do that. And in a way, we actually got more voices in the room at the time because they were able to dial in. You can get loads and loads of people on a screen and in breakout rooms together. So I think that's been quite interesting, is that this difficult time has shown that you can be more sustainable. But I do think there's more that can be done. It'll be interesting to see kind of how these summits are run in future, I think, particularly the world leaders ones, because they're always jetting off around the place, aren't they?
And,
but I do think that a lot of very helpful conversations can kind of be had in person and in the sidelines that you don't get in virtual events.
So our last question today is, do you believe that hosting a G7 summit in Cornwall will create more recognition in the general public of having a more eco-friendly environment?
Maybe. I think I can see what the thought process is behind it, in that I think when you look at images of Cornwall and kind of the rolling hills and the beaches and the sea and that kind of thing, it does definitely ignite a real, it shows you how great nature can be and the importance of protecting it. So I think even that imagery is actually quite helpful in terms of being eco-friendly, and I think it also chimes quite well with the focus on oceans and that kind of thing, which I think the G7 is really interested in, and also COP26, which is coming up in September in Glasgow. I think the biggest thing though is going to be the recommendations that come out of it, right, and how bold they are, and seeing what they say, and I'm hoping that they're ambitious, and I know there's a lot of passion from young people particularly for them to be ambitious, so we'll have to see.
Well, thank you ever so much. That's all of our questions. It was really lovely to meet you.
Yeah,
lovely to meet you too.